Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Western governments and their pliant minions in the media tell us we must venerate NATO, as if it were some kind of pious and benign institution. In fact, NATO is a very dangerous and aggressive military alliance, and it's in panic mode. Cross-talking the nature of NATO, I'm joined by my guest, Wilmer Leon in Washington. He's a political scientist and author, as well as a radio talk show host. And in Washington State, we have Andrei Matryanov. He is a writer, as well as a military and political analyst. All right, gentlemen, cross-talk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Andrei, let me go to you first. In Washington, you got up earliest for the program. Much appreciated. NATO, as I said in my introduction, is in a state of panic. Okay, if they don't let Ukraine in, which they won't anytime soon. My money is on that it will never be part of NATO, but I will let the people in think tankistan in Washington and London continue with their unicorn dreams. But if they permanently keep it out, then we have a forever war, because the West is never going to come to terms with the fact that it lost the conflict against Russia. So NATO has dealt itself a very dangerous hand for all of us. Andrei.
In 1940, when Wehrmacht was finishing off basically armies of France, and you should remember Churchill proclaimed that, you know, now the United Kingdom, Great Britain, and France are the same state. Did it do any good for French, who lost it? No, we know for British, it ended up with Dunkirk. So it's the same situation, mostly proclamations, even if you imagine that they, for some reason, accept Ukraine into NATO, what they're going to do? You know, so it is so ridiculous. It's so preposterous. It is so PR-driven that most people are not taking this seriously. And there is really very little to say about it, because it is indeed preposterous.
Well, Wilmer, absolutely, because, I mean, this wasn't very well thought out, obviously. We've seen what these people have done with Afghanistan, Iraq, with Syria. It's the same group of people, okay? And, oh, by the way, Victoria Nuland is in for her second showing, because she was in the Obama administration when she started all of her shenanigans there with the illegal transfer of power in 2014. But, you know, they expected the sanctions to work. See, they believe in these fantasies that the sanctions would do it, and there would be no, it wouldn't be necessary to worry about Russia militarily. They've completely, grossly miscalculated, and they don't know what to do, because if they induct Ukraine into the alliance, then there's going to be World War III. Okay, then Russia will start hitting military bases in Poland. Okay, but if it doesn't do it, you know, then they're in this case where they're going to try to do Afghanistan 2.0, another 20-year war. Your thoughts?
I don't think. Well, and I don't think if the definition of forever war is Afghanistan, then I don't think that's where we're headed, because now the global dynamic has shifted dramatically. Since the United States started the fight in Afghanistan, in fact, the global landscape has shifted dramatically since the U.S. provoked the conflict in Ukraine. And it's not shifted in favor of the U.S. I also believe that the sentiment in the U.S. is shifting away from throwing more money down this dry well called Ukraine. The world has developed into a multipolar versus a unipolar world. And this was never about Ukraine. This has always been, to your point, about crippling Russia and deindustrializing Germany. And some will argue that the ultimate goal is to defeat China, and that you have to go through Russia in order to accomplish that. It's never been about Ukrainian democracy or sovereignty. It was about if it had been, then the U.S. through Victoria Nuland would not have overthrown the democratically elected Yanukovych government. So even though we're seeing the United, this has really been a money laundering scheme.
Yeah. That's why I mentioned Afghanistan. I didn't mean the war. I meant the grift. Keep going.
Then yes. But I don't think we're in for another 25-year investment. That's why I think they're even creating money now. They just uncovered a $6.2 billion accounting error in the Pentagon. They're trying to inject as much money into it now because I think they see the gravy train is coming to a halt
Andre, address that because, you know, I mean, NATO can start, you know, continue to flood Ukraine with equipment, but they can't flood it with troops unless they want to commit their own troops. I mean, it's been rumored and whispered that the Poles might foolishly get involved with their own troops, though unofficially their troops are there already. I mean, this is what, you know, people are looking at this counteroffensive that is going nowhere. Would Russia then take the offensive once their counteroffensive sputters out, Andre?
We need to start with the fact that combined West doesn't have resources to really fight serious combined war, combined arms war. Russia conducts still the special military operation as opposed to war. And will there be foolish people? There are foolish people, many of them, but there are no resources to do anything about a situation like it is happened with this counteroffensive, for which everybody, me including, have been warning that it's going to be the slaughter, basically, of the last strategic reserves of Ukraine. And General Kartapolov, the guy who ran actually Syrian campaign 2016-2017, yesterday he went on record that, yeah, let us kind of, almost nonchalantly, you know, let us finish off whatever they have in terms of reserves. And then, as he stated, you will see a much more active front from Russia, which I think so is going to happen. I just do not want to give the precise date. And I think so Russia will go for their coast, Black Sea coast, and Odessa, essentially. And that will be their final objective of this phase of the special military operation. So, yeah, we might see some significant activization. And especially this morning, I read the news that Vladimir Putin and Shoigu in their conversation, he basically delivered their information that a lot of people are ready. And even those who have been mobilized, there is still no necessity to engage them into the defense against the so-called offensive by Ukraine. And these are the reserves which will be introduced down the road, and we'll see where they will go. Maybe Kharkov, most likely, but we'll see.
It's really interesting, Wilmer, because, you know, if you look at public opinion polls, yes, Ukraine is lagging in the, you know, in top of mind issues here. But the problem with that is public opinion polls can say one thing, but elites do others. They do it on every other issue. So, I mean, why should Ukraine be any different? The reason why I bring this up is that these people, the narrative of this conflict is good versus evil, existential, and all that. But by doing that, they create an existential conflict. I mean, they generated itself. I mean, Russia can listen to all the demonization. It's gotten used to it, and nobody cares here anymore, okay? But, I mean, for the West, they've turned this into some kind of pipe dream, and, you know, it's not going to happen. How are they going to walk away from this? Are they going to say, well, at least the Russians didn't make it to Paris? Is that what they're going to say?
Well, who knows what they're going to say, because they don't even know what they're going to say. And then after they say it, they don't even remember what they've said. To your point, this is a contrived conflict. There's no argument in that point. The United States started this fight. But this time, what I think is happening is internationally, yes, the United States is losing the argument, if not lost the argument. So when you look at the relationships now between the Saudis and the Iranians, when you look at the relationship now between the Iranians and the Global South, when you look at the number of countries that are trying to join the BRICS, when you look at what's happening with China and a number of African countries, the United States has created the scenario where I wrote a piece months ago called "The Non-Aligned Nations Have Realigned." And the United States is losing on the international front. And therefore, the domestic U.S. politics has not caught up with that reality. But the rest of the world is. Even when you look at Macron going to China and Schultz going to China, and they're understanding who their true trading partners are. And China is divesting of its U.S. investments. So the world is going to bring this to a different result than the United States has had intended, even if Tony Blinken and Samantha Power and the rest of that crew don't get it. The rest of the world is going to force them to.
Yeah, but Andre, these people in power, they don't care what the rest of the world cares. I mean, look at Burrell. You know, Burrell says, the West is the garden and everyone else is the jungle. These people don't get it. Andre, 30 seconds before we go to the break.
I'm on record for many years. Those people are incompetent. And as a result, even Sergei Lavrov 2 days ago, and you cannot get higher than that when he basically calls the U.S. bluff and says, you know what, stop hiding behind your proxies. If you want to fight, come and fight us. It's a chicken, you know, so basically the United States have been called chicken, and the world around knows it. The reputational losses are catastrophic for the United States.
Well, that's absolutely, if you want to fight, fight us. That's perfectly put. Okay, gentlemen, we're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the nature of NATO. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the nature of NATO. Okay, belatedly, we're joined by Eric Zusa in New York. He is an investigative historian whose latest book is America's Empire of Evil. And welcome to the program, Eric. Let's start off with you. You know, in the first part of the program, Wilmer pointed out very clearly, and I agree with him completely, is that America's cachet around the world when it comes to Ukraine is fading and very quickly. But it brings up the issues that we've had a number of countries. We've had China. We've had an African delegation. Lula in Brazil is coming up with his ideas. A lot of people talking about negotiation, ceasefire, frozen conflict. I'm sorry, it's all nonsense, because Russia is not going to negotiate with anyone in the West. Why should they? Eric.
No, of course not. But, you know, I really disagree with the general thrust of what I heard earlier on the show.
Go ahead.
That world public opinion is driving this matter or could prevent a world war from occurring. I look at the bills that are being considered in Congress, and all of, I'm talking about bills that are coming out of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and so forth and so on. And bills that are generally considered to be virtually certain to pass, probably with overwhelming majorities. And what I'm seeing is that the congresspersons in the United States are dead set on demanding that the president release all of the limitations that now exist on the supply of weaponry to Ukraine. I'm not talking about the quantitative limitations, which are basically, you know, financial, which are at this stage of the game relatively unimportant. I'm talking about the introduction of F-16s, the kinds of weapons that would change the military calculus.
Okay, well, let's hold that thought there. Andre, you know something about the military. The F-16s, all this, is that going to change the calculation on the battlefield, in your opinion? Go ahead, Andre.
United States has no weapons, be it in quality or quantity, which can make any significant change in the outcome, including if it's going into basically supply every existing plane in the U.S. Air Force there. So, no, we're talking about two different types of weapon systems, and we're talking about generation, because most what the United States supplies to, the same goes for NATO. To Ukraine, it turned out to be what it actually, I wrote three books about that. It's a dud, basically. It's not designed to fight modern war, and it would make no difference whatsoever. Any F-16 which will be delivered, it will be detected, tracked, and shut down. So it's just makes no sense.
Okay, Eric, go ahead. Go ahead, reply.
That is not my point. My point is that the objective of the overwhelming majority of the congresspersons is for the United States immediately to start supplying missiles that are sufficient to be able to reach Moscow and to be launched by the Ukrainians against whatever they want, and in other words, against the Kremlin, and to release all of the other Biden administration announced limitations on what America will and will not supply to Ukraine and the kinds of assistance that it will and will not supply to Ukraine. There is also legislation to introduce U.S. troops to Ukraine to join in the war against Russia.
Okay, well, Eric, you know, you could talk all you want about congressional bills, but I mean, there is the executive branch. It still does exist here. I'm not really sure the Biden administration wants to do that. If they were going in that direction, they would probably be a lot more gung-ho about getting Ukraine into NATO in the first place. It's the Biden administration is backing off because they realize the mess that they have created for themselves. They can, you know, Congress can double down on stupid all it wants, and it can waste all the money it wants. I don't see. Well, and then if this kind of weaponry enters theater, Russia will react, okay? Haven't we realized that after, what, 15 months of conflict? Wilbur, go ahead in Washington, react.
It's Wilmer, but there's
Wilmer
a difference. There's a difference between selling weapons and using weapons. And that's why I keep referring to this as a money laundering scheme and a Ponzi scheme. Dave Calhoun, the former CEO of Boeing, said back in 2020, I don't care who wins the election because we're going to get paid anyway. And we also have to look at the difference between the mindset in the Pentagon versus the mindset in the White House. And one thing the generals know, they do not want to get in a full-blown conflict with Russia, because that will also bring China into the equation. And they know they can't beat Russia, they can't beat China, and they damn sure can't beat Russia and China. So yes, the Congress is authorizing the sale of weaponry because that's what the interests of Boeing and Lockheed Martin and all of those lobbyists are filling the pockets, surprisingly, of Democrats who are championing this foolishness. But there is a big difference between selling weapons and using weapons.
Andre, there's been a lot of talk in the media about the use of nuclear weapons and the conditions in which they would be used. It's very interesting. We're talking about what we used to think was untalkable, unspeakable, about going up the escalation ladder. I mean, in the talk of it in the West is because, well, there's the perception, if you want to lie to yourself or not admit it, but Ukraine is losing. And this is what the Russians watch, because the Russians have been watching the escalation ladder, and they have reacted to it. They have not gone over what the West has done, but they have matched it. Your thoughts on that, Andre?
First, this nuclear weapons rhetoric in the West is totally contrived. It's totally superficial because actually Russia has a very strict criteria for using the nuclear weapons. And why would you use nuclear weapons when you can do it by conventional means? And that is primarily PR. It's primarily for manipulating of the public opinion. And of course, nobody will actually give Ukraine any kind of the American weapons. And Russia is not going to use nuclear weapons. It is all done for the keeping their public opinion in shape, quote unquote, so to speak, that, you know, Russians are evil and they are losing. And yes, I agree with you. It's all about basically trying to reshape the narrative, which completely collapsed. And again, Peter, you are in Moscow. You see yourself. The Russians don't give a, you know, just don't give a damn about anything what is emanating nowadays from Washington. And again, it cannot go any more bland and any more nonchalant, if you wish, than 2 days ago. Again, I go back to it, of Lavrov, who stated, come and fight us. This is, I mean, it's verbatim almost, you know. So they know, and they already practically all Russian political elite, they speak about enough hiding behind your proxy, and that this is calling United States chicken. That's what it is.
Well, Eric,
I would take just a little issue with that this is PR, because I think there's a practical deterrent effect here as well. It's my dad used to say, you know, when you're in a negotiation, sometimes you got to put the pistol on the table just to let them know you have one. So this, I think, is, yes, there is a PR effect intended here, but I also think there's a practical deterrent effect here as well. This is Russia saying, I'm letting you guys know we aren't joking, we aren't playing, and you push this too far, and we have something for you.
Let's go to Eric, back to Eric in New York. Eric, I mean, it seems to me that NATO cannot accept a defeat here. I mean, it's all predicated on we're the good guys, the Russians are the bad guys. You can't negotiate with bad people. It's a morality play. It's a purity test here. I mean, how does NATO get out of this quagmire that it's gotten itself into?
The only way it can happen is if NATO breaks up. Because if NATO holds together, if Europe stays with the United States all the way up to nuclear war, and I can see several possible ways that we can get to nuclear war. If NATO holds together throughout that entire pathway, any of the routes, and there are several, we've got to recognize that Russia is going to have to change its policies, its announced policies. That is to say, it's really not going to be having a conversant on the other side. The collective West is right now determined to defeat Russia.
But Andrei, Russia is determined not to be defeated. You have the last minute, Andrei. Go ahead.
That means war.
Well, no, it's very simple. There are political fallout, geopolitical fallout, if you wish, have been properly planned for. And now that we have basically a clear strategy, a military strategy of Russia, which completely subordinated to the political strategy, you can see yourself. I mean, look at Europe. Look what is happening there economically. And again, I have to go, and most of us military people, including Colonel McGregor or Larry Johnson, who is a CIA analyst, and when you look at across the board of professional people, NATO is a dead man walking. Let me put it this way. We have the almost guaranteed now issue of Turkey joining BRICS at some point of time. And we already have the basically cracks in NATO itself.
Okay, well, we've run out of time, but I like dead man walking. I think that kind of puts a bow on it here. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Washington State, New York, and in Washington. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.